Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Embody Your Soul podcast. I am your host, Alexandra Shelley, also known as a modern medium. And the mission of this podcast is to create a sacred space for us all so we can tap in and discover how we can connect to our divine selves through spiritual connection and best practices. If you are new here, thank you so much for finding me. And if you are a regular listener, thank you so much for coming back every week or every month or whenever the heck you come back to listen in on the magic. And if you haven't already, make sure to give me a follow wherever you love to listen. Make sure to follow me on Instagram and Threads at @themodernmedium_. And yeah, I would say that's about it. I share primarily all of my information either on Threads, on my Instagram, or on my podcast. And if you are looking to book a session with me, please go to my website at themodernmedium.com. And I am so excited to serve you. Also, I have a new program out called The Intuitive Path. It is a sacred container that is 6 months, and it is helping you begin to trust yourself, helping you begin to really trust in your vessel, trust in your body, and feel safe for your body to follow your intuition. What often happens is that we've been told, we've been programmed otherwise to not feel safe, to hold big emotions, to hold the container of the soul and follow our intuition. And we have been in survival mode, or we function in a way that pleases others, or we're ashamed of our intuition, or we're just ashamed of our body. But this is where I really, really help you feel so grounded in your body and in your vessel, so you can begin to feel safe, not only in your body, but safe to really trust yourself. And reinforcing that trust with somatics and a really, really beautiful practice that I learned in my integrative trauma coaching called body trauma liberation, which are gentle, effective, and very simple movements that allow you to drop out of your head into your body and really follow the cues and understand, what am I not moving through? What am I holding back? And also, I do Reiki healings, and you will learn a little bit of mediumship. It's just going to be amazing. It's so wonderful. So if you are eager to learn about this container, please email me at themodernmedium.co. That will also be all in the show notes. Thank you so much, you guys. I am really excited about this episode. This is the return of the absolutely stellar Rachel White. She is the Skeptic Shaman. She was on a while ago, and she's just absolutely incredible. And in this episode, we talk so much about spiritual integrity. And what she's really passionate about talking about is like ethical practitioners and ethical spiritualism and spirituality, and how like spirituality and like the spiritual community can get really culty, and how to identify a practitioner that is culty and unethical versus one that is very safe and very ethical. And also how spiritual practices should make you feel good, how they should be empowering, how they should be pleasurable, how they should be adding joy and goodness to your life. So we really get into that and so much more. Make sure to follow Rachel on Instagram at Totem Rage. She also has an incredible Substack, so I will put that in the show notes as well. And she has her own podcast, so I'll put all that in the show notes. And there are many ways to work with her. She also has her own tarot deck, and she has flower essences. Like, she's incredible. She has an amazing practice, and there's so many ways to explore how to work with her. So again, I hope you love this episode. I hope it resonates. Do not be shy. Let us know how this lands with you, and we'll see you next time. Hello, everyone. Thank you so much. And I am so excited to have Rachel back on the podcast. Rachel, thank you so much. I'm excited to chat again.
Thank you for having me. And I love that beautiful sunlight behind you. Oh, it's a sunny moment in California and in Texas.
Yes. Yeah. This is like my book corner. It's like my favorite corner of the house. And I thought I would, yeah, set the tone. So you were on my podcast about like a year and a half ago, maybe 2 years. Yeah. And
I always start with the question, what does it mean to embody your soul? And so why not ask you it again? Perhaps something has evolved or changed.
Yeah, I would say, you know, on topic, I think, for what's going on in the world, it's, are you being your most authentic self? And one of the best ways, I think, to measure that or check in with that is how much effort are you exerting to manage other people's perception of you, right? If you're embodying your soul, you're just living. As Ram Dass would say, be here now. You're being here now. And you don't have to manage, mitigate, remediate, or propagandize all that much. It should just be pretty easy. They're not pretty your true. Interactions as a result of you embodying your soul. With others are easy or not, that's a separate issue. But you should feel at ease in your own skin, I think.
Yes, I love that. Ease, a sense of peace, home, amazing. So Rachel and I are really excited to get into this topic about what the spiritual industry has become and morphed into, what it just continues to be. And Rachel, I'd love for you to first share your perspective as to what you believe is going on, or at least from a skeptical, shamanic practitioner lens. Yeah, what it's looking like.
It's funny. I mentioned you right before we started recording that I just finished the last episode in an HBO documentary series called Breath of Fire about Guru Jagat and Kundalini Yoga. And I have a lot of friends who do Kundalini. I've done Kundalini. I taught at Kundalini Yoga Studios. I taught meditation, et cetera. But a few things blew my mind, and this will answer your question. One of them is the gentleman, forgot his name, the Guru Jagat's guru, the guy who brought, quote, Kundalini to America, made it up. He was actually a taxi driver. He wasn't a spiritual leader at all. He came to this country to get away from a woman he impregnated. And people, when they saw him, because he was a Sikh and he wore a turban, and Americans, especially then, were rather ignorant. And they're like, oh my God, are you like a guru, a mystic? Are you a yoga teacher? And he was like, you know what? Yeah, I am. He made it all up. Kundalini energy is real. But like what he was doing was not real. So what was fascinating about it was watching this sort of boss, bitch, girl boss figure step into this thing he created. And if you look at it, a guy on the show, I think he was a researcher, a journalist, said, she's like a bad photocopy of a counterfeit bill. Because the original wasn't an original. It was a fugazi to begin with. And of course, there's rape, financial exploitation, cultural misappropriation, all these things. So it's a really good 4-episode documentary series that encapsulates the negative manifestation of what I'm seeing in the spiritual community, which is this abundance doctrine, taking advantage of people's anxieties, fears, desperation, hopes, giving them hopium, exploiting them and telling, I'm going to help you manifest. I'm going to do this for you. Your life's going to be amazing. Meanwhile, all they do is parasitize the client, right? And so they're getting rich. They're manifesting abundance. They are. You're not so much. It's not actually that good for you. And then on the positive side, I will say more and more I've noticed, because I do coaching and mentoring work specifically in this space for like other practitioners, people that are curious about becoming practitioners. And increasingly people are looking for something real, like they were before COVID. So COVID really weirded the space, because I think social media, TikTok, which I was not on at the beginning of COVID, I'd never been really on social media. I think people were treating it like a spiritual vending machine, and then they got burned. We've all been burned, trust me, myself included, from back in the day. Not every mentor is a good person. You don't know until you get in there sometime. But people are looking for more substance, and they're seeking out less hopium because that didn't really work out for them. And they want to work with people that are transparent, that they can trust. And a lot of that, I think, is them maturing as people, as spiritual seekers, and going, you know what? I need to take accountability. I can't just pay people to hear what I want to hear that doesn't actually benefit me long term. So yeah, there's some negative rot, just like in any industry where you're selling something that can't really be measured too, by the way, even in somewhere you can measure it. Enron wasn't exactly a retreat in Bali, and they were full of it and corrupt. But I also think people are really getting hip to the grift, and they're really starting to trust themselves and work on their own discernment, which is really important.
Absolutely. Did you say hopium?
Yeah, I didn't come up with that. I cannot take credit for that. But when I heard it, I was like, yes, that's what it is. It's opium, but it's hope. And the other side of that, and but it's the same sort of thing as like the abject fear porn of it. People who want to hear nihilistic, death culty, end time stuff, because that affirms their anxiety, their dread. If their life's not going well, they're like, oh, there's a reason for it, which is the world is collapsing. And then the other side of that coin is the hopium, which is, you know, 6 days to six figures. All you need to do is vision board this. Just get your vibration right and you're going to be a millionaire. It's, no, you need a website. You're probably going to have to work really hard. You can still, manifestation is real. It's just not, it's not a magic trick. And the reason, because someone the other day asked me, why doesn't it just work and whatever? I said, because the spirit doesn't work for you. Like, the universe is not a spiritual bending machine for your pleasure. You're not the only thing in it. This is a complicated operation. And also the horrors. Can you imagine if you got everything you ever wanted in the moment, what your life would look like? What a disaster it would be. And it's funny coming from spiritual people, because if you believe in spirit, don't you believe in things that see a bigger picture maybe than you, that can widen their gaze while you're in this human experience? Maybe defer to them within reason a little bit. Okay? That's probably the reason I have that Maserati about now.
Yes. Oh my God. No, I love that you said that. And honestly, so dorky of me, but it made me think about what is it, Bruce Almighty, where he grants everyone, yes, the world's in chaos.
It's in chaos. It's not supposed to work that way. Yeah.
Yeah. And there's so many things that have to be in agreement for that timeline and for that to work out. And also so much manifestation, or actually really, I almost want to say all of it, is like embodiment. It's, you want that, you got to be it. You have to own it and take ownership of what you need to do.
There's an American economist named Thomas Sowell who says, very it's like his most famous little line is, there are no solutions, only trade-offs. Mm-hmm. Meaning you can manifest things, but there will be something that you give in exchange, whether it's your time, your money, your effort. People who have small businesses, especially in the business of food, we don't go on vacations or buy shoes the way other people do. It just doesn't work that way. Mm-hmm. And you can't be bitter about it. You have to just go, that's the trade-off, because I get to do, this is absurd. It's fun. It's awesome. This is what I get to do every day. So there's trade-offs to it. Do I have a corner office in an 80-floor building? No. Do I need that? No.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Ugh, incredible. I love it. So I guess what are some, I'm thinking how to word it, what are some soft traits of some kind of organization or practice that is getting a little culty, a little toxic? And then maybe what are some harder traits?
Yeah. And Rick Ross, who I think it's Dr. Ross, I'm not sure. He runs the, I think it's called the Cult Institute of America. So he's an expert. I read his book. And one of the things he said that really rocked my world was, you only need two people to have a cult. And I thought, if I ever talk about this to anybody, that's a really important thing to bring up. Because I think people assume it has to be the size or scale of Scientology or something like that for it to be a cult. It doesn't have to be that way. It doesn't have to be in person at all. It can be online. It can be via Zoom or Facebook groups, or so expand your horizons when it comes to that stuff. But behaviorally, and what Breath of Fire really highlighted for me, I had a dust up with a Kundalini yoga studio owner back in the Dizay, because I thought she was grabby and weird about money. And I actually sent her email and I found it today. I printed it out for myself 16 years ago or something. Embarrassing. And I thought she took advantage of people. And it gave me a weird feeling. And then for many years after that, I always wondered if I, because I try and take accountability. I was, am I just confrontational? What was it about her that bothered me so much or whatever? And then I watched the documentary. I was like, oh my God, it should bother everyone. And one of the big ones is a flagrant disconnect between what they preach and what they proclaim and what they recommend for others and what they, to use your word, embody in practice, not in their words, but in their behaviors that you can observe. So Guru Jagat, spiritual leader, etc., all this stuff about vibration, magnetism, and then in text messages or emails with her team, the staff that works at all these yoga studios and foundation, just F-bombs and abuse, just relentless abuse. And I had seen bits of that peripherally. And I also noticed another thing, which was free labor. That's another thing to work for. So I'm not rich. Totem Readings is not a big business. Everything we've published is self-published. This is not a big operation. I pay everybody. There's never a situation where you shouldn't be paying people for things that they're doing for you. And I forgot the term they use for it in yoga, but it means like work study, I think, loosely translated, but it's just free labor. Mm-hmm. And the bosses pay themselves all that money. And I observed that when I was living in Chicago. And I said, what do you guys mean? You come in here and you like scrub the bathroom floor. Doesn't you have a cleaning crew or something? We're like, no, this is our work study. And I'm like, what part of this is study? And they said the service. So that's the other thing, is to be of service to spirit is important, but you should never squish yourself so thoroughly that you're not thriving. Things to look at, if you're in a group, a dynamic, if you're a coach, a numerologist, whatever the hell it is, right? I don't care. Are you doing well financially since this person and their influence came in for you? Not like they're a wizard or anything. They shouldn't be accountable for making you a millionaire, but has it changed precipitously and for the worse? How's your health doing? Mental health and physical health. Checking in with that. Your relationships. Are you meeting new people, making friends, spending time with friends and family? Or is that circle getting exponentially smaller? Because cults and coercive control dynamics are very isolated. So these are things to look for. And the other big one, there's a couple here. On a personal human scale level, with just a practitioner, is their name their real name? Yes, I get it. You have a spiritual name or whatever, but that means people can't Google you. Number one, it takes effort and everyone's really busy. You know, you can't get a background check on every yoga instructor. That's a lot. And then the other piece of it too is it rewires neural pathways. Keith Raniere, who led Nexium, made everyone call him Vanguard because after a while it deifies. He's not a human being named Keith Raniere who grew up in upstate New York. He's the Vanguard. And it does shift your thoughts and your beliefs. So that's one, no fake names. It's just a pet peeve. Another one is like a spiritual aesthetic or affectation, almost like they're LARPing, live action role play, where it's always the Pashmina, it's always their voice. You have a kind of Sam Harris hostage negotiator voice and just all this shit that's like, why are you acting like this? And nobody, and then you see them like having a cup of coffee or something in the back room with employees and they're just being normal. It to me, all of that just takes effort. And it's calculated and intentional. It's weird. I don't like it. And the big other thing with practitioners is they should be empowering you to self-serve. And if you need to come back all the time to get a reading, for instance, like you come to me for a tarot reading every week, it must not be working very well if you have to come to me all the time. If I'm doing my job, you shouldn't have to come back and see me for another 12 months. Yeah. If the energy works so great, just go and let it integrate and feel better. Congratulations, you got good energy work.
Yeah, absolutely. No, those are great with the voice. And yeah.
That voice makes me crazy.
This is somewhat a simple question, but I love to do my best to try to just break things down for the listeners. Now, it's quite interesting. So I'm in my integrative trauma practitioner training. And it's quite interesting because how do I put this? Because I'm not trying to like diss students, but it's almost like some people that are taking the training are so afraid of any activation when it's like, we need activation. We need something to work with. That's how you integrate and heal and discharge trauma. So I guess I would love to hear your description for the listeners. What is definitely a difference between you're going to someone and you have activation and it's beneficial and it's good? And then what's the kind of activation that's overwhelming and not good and actually not benefiting from it?
Yeah, that's a really good question. And I've actually never heard it worded that way. So one thing I would say is, let's say things got shaken up in a session. The positive version of that will be that the practitioner arms you with tools and action items for aftercare. So we're going to ground. I recommend this for grounding and things that don't involve them or you spending more money, right? Like you on your own, easy to manage, things that you can do for self-care. And they're also probably going to urge you to take it easy on yourself, be gentle with yourself, reach out if you need anything, but not step into scope lanes that aren't theirs. So I always tell my clients, I'm not a therapist, I'm not a lawyer, I'm not a doctor. And I'm not trauma. I forgot the name of the training, but I'm not certified in that as an example. And I don't pretend to be either. And so I'll be kind and I'll get you tools for afterwards that are in my wheelhouse, but I will let you know that if you need other care beyond that, if I notice high levels of emotionality or things that are concerning to me psychologically and otherwise, I'll say, listen, do you have people in your life you can reach out to? Do you have a therapist? Are you cool? And if they say yes, and then that's the beginning and the end of it for me, really. And then a negative thing would be if they stir that shit up to get you codependent on them and enmeshed with them. And I would also say there's a type of practitioner, and I don't know if they're intentionally being parasitic or exploitative. It could be subconscious. It could be their own unhealed inner child trauma manifesting as a false spiritual healer. But they will activate you and trauma bond with you. And there's a reason Nexium, he branded the women with a cauterizing pen. It's excruciatingly painful. And they did it together. He was clever about how to exploit people. And he knew that they would bond with him because of the trauma. So just people that were, it's very histrionic. It's very high drama. I've seen there's some practitioners out there that basically tell everyone, we're talking tens of thousands of people who work with them, that they were all sexually abused by their families growing up. By the way, this is a real thing that people do. So they stop talking to that family, they move in with them, and they dedicate their life to formally or informally a cult, right? And they believe this. And can you imagine living with that? If that's not true, that to me is like a very special spiritual crime. And also, you're not a therapist. You're not an expert in this field. You don't know what dissociative disorders are or anything else. You're out of your depth. And I have my own criticisms loosely with psychotherapy from time to time, but I've had excellent therapists. If anything else, it's about the individuals that you're working with and their ethics. Yeah, that's a big red flag to me, is them almost salivating at your trauma. Because it's going to mean that you're bonded with them, and also they're probably going to make some money. And if you don't think people out there operate that way, I'm glad that you haven't been banged up as much as me, but I'm here to tell you they actually do exist. Like, congratulations on avoiding them. That's good news, but they are out there, man. And with the economy being where it is, you're going to see a lot more of this too.
Oh, absolutely. And even this is like more of a comment, but if you haven't comment back to this, by all means. But it is quite interesting when people start becoming business coaches. And I'm like, what? Because you built a business online and then talking about, I actually had a friend deal with that and she paid her tons of money. And I'm like, babe, she has no certifications, nothing. She doesn't even have a website. She doesn't have anything on her Instagram showing like anything. And people like just set up shop. It's crazy.
That's the beautiful and horrible thing about America. Same thing with religion. Same, we have all this freedom, really. And there's positives to that. The negative of it is, especially in this personal development, self-help, spiritual marketplace, there is no governance. There are no regulators. There are no standards. There's nothing. There's no like consistent rate sheet or fees or standard operating procedures or code of ethics. There aren't. So one organization I would recommend people look out for and look into, and I have no relation to them other than taking their pledge. It's called Speak Safely. Their website is speaksafely.org. And their pledge is just a practitioner pledge. I'm certified in the areas I say I am. I'm capable of delivering the scope of services to you. I will not do things outside of my scope of services with you. Like, just a simple, transparent thing. Because they're trying to change the conversation in this space. And the reason is, it's founded by the family of a woman who was killed in that James Arthur Ray sweat lodge. I don't know if you remember that. He was one of the authors of The Secret. Oprah loved him. He's the original progenitor of manifestation gospel. And a bunch of people died under his watch. And people had tried to speak up and they tried to help. And he ignored them and he suppressed them. So her family set up Seek Safely for a reason, which is there's nowhere to go to if this guy's being unethical until he commits a crime. Something that's criminally, legally enforceable in our society. Otherwise, they're all grown-ups. What are you going to do? How are you going to get them out?
Yeah.
And by the way, he's back to business coaching and charging an arm and a leg. And I quote, because if I can survive being in prison and all of this, you can survive anything. He didn't even take a breath. It was like the moments after he got out of prison. So, yeah.
Absolutely disgusting. So these questions came through as inspired through a conversation. So maybe we can, again, step by step. What are potentially some signs, say like you're getting into becoming a practitioner and you're like, oh, am I a little culty? Am I sipping some kind of Kool-Aid of some sort? And then even how to become not that way, how to become almost like anti-culty. And I would love your perspective on that.
As a practitioner, one of my checks, and I work with this with my coaching clients a lot, it's like a little pre-flight diagnostic of, am I interpreting messages for me and my personal spiritual practice is being for everyone? It's a problem. So we get downloads, insights. We have prophetic visions or dreams, depending on the kind of psychic you are. This can take many sizes and shapes, and I have them as well. And while they might have macro level implication, I never get the directive from spirit that I need to educate the masses or that this is a message for everyone or everyone needs to start doing the things that I'm being told or guided to do. That's just for me. And this is one of the reasons I love shamanism is your experience of the divine, your experience of spirit is yours, mine is mine. They don't contradict each other at all. You're allowed to have your own version of it. And that's true. And mine's true as well. So that's one for practitioners. The other one is the profit motive thing. I think you really have to watch yourself with what's motivating me right now in this moment. Why am I saying yes to this? Why am I saying no to this? Why do I want to do this? And we all have to make money. You have to pay your bill. So you shouldn't be irresponsible. But also your motivation for creating things like the decks I created, the motivation's not money. Side note, anyone who's ever made a deck can tell you they don't make money. Not really. So you have to love it. Like, you do it because you want to do it because it's additive, right? And then make sure as you're designing it, how you're going to sell it and for what money, make sure that you're giving yourself the best chance you can to make money, but that shouldn't be the why. And I talked to a coach, I interviewed him on my podcast, who got burned by his coach in this, he didn't use this language, but it's a multi-level marketing scheme because he goes, my upstream and my downstream and over all that Herbalife language, bro. But he got burned and he realized like, oh, and that's weird. And she took me for a ride. And he looked at the whole life cycle of his experience. But then he also looked at what he was being guided to do with onboarding people and tell them that they need to invest in themselves and that they need to put it on 2 or 3 credit cards. And that's what they need to do. And he was telling people this, but it's because he believed it because he did it. Because that's what his coach did to him. And so he was being sincere, but he had a real record scratch moment. It's that episode, I think, is called The Retreat to Move Forward on my podcast, The Skeptical Shaman. So if you want to go and listen to that, he was really honest and vulnerable. And I really appreciated his candor. And he said, I had to take a good long break and look at the situation objectively and take accountability for my part in it and what I was contributing to. And then also figure out what does this mean for me moving forward. So yeah, that's out there. And then in terms of us falling for things, I would just say, you don't always have to understand why, you don't have to explain it to yourself, but if someone makes you really uncomfortable, like in your body, in your emotional body, anything, if you feel like you're holding tension or your heart starts beating, you have tightness in your chest, just get away. The body's brilliant. It tells you a lot. And there's a great book called The Gift of Fear by a guy who has a personal protection agency. He was Elizabeth Taylor's bodyguard when he was a teenager. He lied about his age. Very funny story. But he said, don't be afraid of being rude. Don't think you're a flake. Just walk. Even if in that moment, it's just about getting out of that room, you can figure out getting your money back later. You can figure out the why later, but break the spell and protect yourself first. And I think sometimes when I sit with information, I hold it in my body and I see how does this feel in my body, I get a lot of clarity. Really quickly. Yeah. Because you can't research everybody. We're all busy. You can't like make this your whole life. And you also don't go around cynical thinking everybody's a bullshit artist and see the world through those eyes. That's not pleasant either. So just, I would say, empower yourself and trust yourself to bounce if you're not cool with something.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
That I love. Thank you for breaking that down and sharing that. And I want to get into, I know we were just talking about this before recording, but how really something should allow you to thrive. And a practice should allow you to thrive. A group should allow you to thrive. So I guess I'd love for you to expand on that. What should that be? And even if some signs are not so much like spiritual or energetic, it's just life. It's just existence.
I think one thing is life is not always going to be consistent. The only consistent thing is change. So you can't expect constant, permanent, perfect happiness all the time. So it's my little footnote piece of context for this. But if you're working with a spiritual practitioner, a life coach, a group, you're going every day to a yoga studio, you're doing work study, whatever it is, it should be improving your life in measurable ways. So self-awareness, health, relationships, finances. Otherwise, what's the point of it? What's the point of it? It shouldn't only be taking from you, right? You should thrive. Or it should be, I should say, positioning you and moving you in the direction of thriving. And you should be less fragile. You should be more resilient. That's what spirituality, when it's real and it's built from the basement to the attic, it builds resilience. It doesn't take from it. And and also this whole thing of the collective suffering mandate we all have through social media, it doesn't help any individual or group that you care about that you're suffering needlessly. Because if they were in your position and your life was going well, they'd just be living, enjoying it. And trouble, hardship, suffering, grief, these things find you, right? That's part of life. So you don't have to go looking for them. You don't have to borrow them from someone else. And I would just say, if you feel pressured to hide your own happiness, to not thrive somehow, through social or political pressure, that's a big red flag there. That's not normal. I've had really difficult weeks where, you know, if anyone out there is a small business owner, we all have weeks where we feel like we're losing everything. You don't. It's just a feeling. And a friend of mine might have something incredible happening for them, and they just get a congratulations from me. Their joy, them having this brief moment in this saga that's working out for them, it doesn't take from me. That's not why I'm in hardship. Yeah, I just think the collective suffering, it reminds me of the Puritans and the witch hunts and the Inquisition, this idea of somehow if you have, quote, the privilege of thriving in the moment, then that means you're sinful. You have some kind of original sin and you have to purify yourself a bit through suffering. It's a very Catholic approach to things. And honestly, the Catholics do it better. They have better outfits and end fancier. They put on a real show. I'd rather just go, if I wanted guilt and suffering, I'd just go to church. I'm good. The original drag queen story hour, for real.
Honestly, yeah. There is this girl on TikTok that had this whole thing about what was chic, and she's Catholicism, so chic, like the gold goddess. I'm like, honestly, absolutely.
It's very Persian, and I mean that as a compliment. I like gold, and I like incense. I like church incense. But yeah, no, just there are all these ideologies, and a lot of it's in our community, the world of woo, where they don't see themselves as religious, right? Because they're open-minded and they're spiritual or however they term it, but their behavior and their thinking model are inherently religious. And it's a lot of culty stuff, like us versus them. And if you think this, then you're a bad person, you're my enemy. What Scientology called suppressive people are still calls suppressives. That's why Tom Cruise and his kids, those kids don't talk to Nicole Kidman, their mother. Stuff like that, because they're suppressive. This social media has really weaponized a new kind of religion among a group of people who don't think they're religious. I would just say, anytime you're starting to get on your soapbox, you feel pretty self-righteous, go do some charity work, take a break, walk away, disconnect, because it's a sign that you're going in the wrong direction.
Amen to that. And I loved your comment about the collective suffering. It's been quite weird because I know with, again, everything going around across the world, you're like, oh, should I not be doing this? Should I not be ordering from this website? And then with the election, should I not be okay? Like, it's quite interesting. And even, I don't know if this is something like you would even talk about, but yeah, it's quite interesting with like purity culture too with spiritual, mm-hmm. the spiritual industry with no alcohol, like kissing someone or like having sex with someone is like such an energetic exchange. It's quite odd.
Yeah. It's funny. I get a lot of criticism because I eat meat and I drink alcohol. And on occasion I smoke marijuana or microdose mushrooms. And like also Google shaman, number one. Number two, that's my business. And this is part of it too. When I do coaching work, mentoring work, I give guidance and I try to provide resources and I try and be present and support them in their exploration of things. But when they ask me like, what do you think I should eat? Or I'm like, whatever, I don't care. I have vegan clients, I have sober clients, I have every religious background, every cultural background. It's none of my business. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of it is people just wanting to seem like they're adding value by giving you restrictive, prescriptive parameters. Because some people, it really absorbs their dread and gives them catharsis to feel like someone's telling them exactly how to live. That was a theme in the Breath of Fire documentary, because people, after the cult broke up, the older generation, they didn't know, should I shave my armpits? Is it going to throw the magnetic field of my body off? Am I going to die early if I shave my armpits? Because they had people managing their every mode. They were all vegetarians. They ate during certain times of the day. They did certain poses on certain times of the year. Like, it gave their life so much order that their ability to develop those decision-making capabilities for themselves completely atrophied. They were almost like babies from a psycho-emotional perspective when they got out. So I think that's why people like that stuff. And I also think everybody always wants a binary, final, totally contained, complete answer for things. Like, hey, I don't feel good. What should I do? And it's, I don't know. It could be a million things, man. And also just day to day, you're going to be bloated a couple times a year. That doesn't mean you need to find a new spiritual guru or become orthorexic on a green juice cleanse or get ketamine therapy. Eat an apple and go for a walk. I don't know what to tell you. It's not always that deep.
Absolutely.
There are a lot of people who do what you and I do who like to stimulate neuroses in people. Because if you can poke at latent pain or an insecurity or whatever, then you can offer a solution. And usually that solution costs money, right? You need more work with me. You need more sessions. You need a product I'm selling. I joke all the time that I'm such a dumbass the way I structured my business because it's ethical. Because it's much harder sell in the marketplace to be like, I don't know what my flower essences are going to do for you. I have no idea. I like them. If you're interested, buy them. If not, have a nice day. I don't have a hard sell in me because that's the truth is I don't know. I don't know. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I love that so much. And even it's perfect because I was thinking about the question and then you started talking about it. I'm like, oh, this could be an interesting segue. But for those who are practitioners, and I know I've gone through this where it's like, oh yeah, like you would see me once a month, totally, because I'm like building my business and it's like good money. But then how can you explain, or maybe could you explain to listeners like why that's a good thing to not have these consistent emergency repeats? It's good that they don't see you for 6 months to a year.
Yeah. And it's always a whole year, but I've gotten my clients that work with me to a point where they reach out and they go, hey, listen, I know you said a tarot reading's good for about a year. It's been 6 months since I met with you. Things have really changed. And I was wondering if I could book another service. And it's like, yeah, you're thinking about it. You're not just coming in particular to abate your anxiety or make decisions for you. That makes me really uncomfortable. And there is no such thing as an emergency tarot reading. As someone who's read tarot cards since they were 9-year-old, I have a tarot deck. I love tarot. I will tell you, it's not heart surgery. It's not neurosurgery. It's not first responder.
I love what you're saying about there are no emergency tarot sessions. Amen to that.
Yeah.
And it's quite interesting because I know I've dealt with that where I personally, thank goodness, I haven't really gotten a ton, but I don't really prefer, I'll speak nicely to it, I don't prefer those kinds of sessions. And I know some practitioners take those, like, gladly, and maybe it's out of the kindness of their hearts. But yeah, what is that like with that experience, and even like having boundaries so you don't become, or like your work doesn't become like that?
Yeah, I would say shamanism is a little different. Maybe it gives us shamans a slight advantage, in full disclosure, but how do I word this? Sorry. It's a really deep question. Okay, so one day you're going to die, right? So we start, like,
at the beginning.
That's the beginning, is the end. We're all, 100% of us, we're going to die of death at some point. Then, assuming you're sincerely spiritual, you're going to go on to something else. Your soul's going to move on. How do you want to have lived your life? And I know that sounds really intense and weird and almost nihilistic, but when I'm stressed out about a business decision, I go there and I go, what would like almost dead / dead Rachel have to say about this, truly? And it gets simple. And the other thing too is that it tends to be good for business. Maybe not short term. You may not become a millionaire in 8 days or whatever people are promising now. But over time, it's a set of brand behaviors that I think really benefit you, especially with people becoming more discerning and looking for people on whom they can rely and with whom they can share some trust. So yeah, I do that. It's, the Romans refer to it as memento mori, which is remember you will die, remember death. And it's a really good reframing, because anxiety, negativity, bias, financial pressure, all these things can temporarily make you a little crazy. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. And even to expand a bit on this topic, it's, I know I've gone through that too, where I'm going through something really painful and I'm like, I need something, like I need to do something, when really, yeah, like you were saying, you're like, go eat an apple and drink a glass of water. We don't need to have a fix for everything. So I'd love to hear your perspective on that. And even, yeah, like maybe not like what to do, but something instead.
We should always be getting a little bit better at being a human in whatever way that is, but like over time and iteratively and bit by bit, and understanding that's part of, I don't know, the adventure of being alive is like, 10 years from now, I'm going to know things that I don't know now. And that's okay. That's good. That means you're doing it right. And so understanding that, like, today in this moment, you don't have to solve for everything necessarily. And also, if you're feeling bad, not like you should allow people to abuse you or you should be sick or ill or in danger or any of that, but just let's say you wake up, you're not in a great mood. Right? You don't know why. And you're not sick, but you don't feel great. And it's, what is this about? Did I go to bed on time? Am I sleeping deeply? Is this maybe something from my emotional body or my unconscious or my energy body trying to get my attention? A weird thing with me, because I'm a little bit of a workaholic. I'm a workaholic in recovery, I think. And it got way worse starting transitioning to this business full time. When I worked in corporate America, I didn't have any of these problems, apparently. I'm like the worst boss I've ever had. Feed, we're always learning new lessons, but one of the key things that I tend to experience is when I slow down about 2 or 3 days into time off, like real time off.
Yeah.
I usually hit an emotional bottom. I hit an energetic bottom, and then it gets deeper. And you wouldn't expect that, because you're like, well, it's time off. I should be enjoying myself. And you are, but if you're running a deficit, if you're stealing from Peter to pay Paul energetically, hormonally, in any way, you know, there's going to be a reverb on that. And every time that happens to me, I go, I know I did this to myself. I have no one to blame but me. So how did I do this to myself? How can I get better at knowing that I'm heading this way before the wheels all come off? And because to me, it's like about almost a competitive drive to want to optimize. And so I'm harnessing my own productivity addiction in the other direction. There's no reason for me to be this stupid about myself and my own health. I'm an herbalist. I'm a meditation coach. It's embarrassing. I got to get better at this. Yeah.
Yeah. It even goes
looking
back
forward to that. This December, by the way, when I hit the big wall for 2 days, I schedule my nervous breakdown every year.
Oh my God. Lock the door.
I know when it's going to happen. Yeah.
Did you ever do that, like, in school or anything? Like, you had a big test or finals, and then you got sick, like, right afterwards? That letdown of energy? Momentum sustains a lot of us, I think, in ways we're not totally aware of in real time. And I know that about myself. So my husband will sometimes be like, this, that, and the other. I'm like, oh, I can't go slow today because it's all going to fall apart. Oh, like, why are my coyotes up in the air? My little legs, if I look down, I'm going to fall.
Yeah.
What's also great is even, like, coming back to what we spoke about before, is you're at least, like, you're aware of your tendencies. And then you're like, hey, I'm a freaking meditation coach. I'm an herbalist. Like, I need to work on this. And I think that's probably also one of the most important things about becoming a not culty spiritual practitioner is you're always actively working on yourself. And, like, the medicine that we're giving is medicine for us first and foremost.
Absolutely. And the word shaman means wounded healer. In a Russian dialect, by the way. It's not a Native American word. Native Americans, because I'm part Native American, it's medicine man. And there's other terms, by the way, too. But yeah, we either transmute the spiritual diseases or poisons into medicine, or we suffer from them. And I think sometimes, like, I had a weird interaction. We're just going to lay it out there. I don't know this person. I didn't sign on NDA. It was weird for me. So I'll show you on the doll where I got touched by this experience later. So I'm doing a podcast interview. You're a podcast host. And we're really going to be getting 5 to 10 minutes of, like, just pleasantries, frankly. What do you do? And tell me more about that. Whatever. And he has a meltdown. And no explanation. No, oh my God, I got bad news. Or, oh my God, I'm having an emergency. I gotta go. I'm not feeling this. I just am in a weird place today. And I'm like, okay. Like, it was so abrupt and weird. And the ultimate irony of this for me is not that I expect people to be perfect, but he was he's a TED Talk speaker, published author, and his book is about a proprietary trademarked breathwork methodology to, quote, overcome overwhelm.
Oh.
So his subject matter expertise is overcoming overwhelm situationally. And he didn't last 7 minutes, like, just being a person. So he may have at some point had some success, and I believe that he's earnest and sincere, but sometimes we practitioners get an early win and we assume that we've mastered something. All that is an early win, and you should be happy about it. That's cool if he was able to design something that helped him in a situation, but you're not using it now. And it's that doctor, heal thyself thing, right? Like, we shouldn't need to be perfect, but you should, if you claim to have a tool, you should use your tool, right? Like, I never advise anyone on how to not be an angry bitch. Haven't mastered that yet. I still struggle with that, so I'm not going to pretend that I'm the expert in it. Yeah. You want your tarot cards read? You want to talk about tarot cards? I'll sit with you. We could do that all day long. Yeah.
I love that. And I really love what you said about the early win. It's so insightful. And even that's great, but it doesn't have that wisdom of that long experience yet. Like, it's the early win that has, that's great. Keep using it. But that's so important. And I feel like that's, again, I know that's what I've been seeing. I'm sure, obviously.
And also, if you have a breakthrough and then you take a step or two back, or you lose what feels like progress, that's also not a loss. It's this is a marathon. And so one thing I would urge everyone to do is get practicing right away with whatever your thing is, practice, even charge a little bit of money if you're bumping up to a different kind of practice client, but don't take something to market that you don't know through and through in every cell of your body that you can do when you're having a bad day, when you're off, when the client's difficult, everything else. Because these tools that we, in his case, sell people, how do I want to word this? I'm trying to do delicate without being full of shit, which is really a challenging thing to do. There's a responsibility on us to give people things that actually work. Right. And not just come up with something just to be, like, clever or to add a layer. You know, it's funny. I had a client reach out to me, and I don't want to offend anyone, but also this is true. She reached out to me. She went through my coaching program and sent me an Instagram on DM. She goes, okay, so is human design just like Kabbalah, astrology, and chakras? And I was like, yeah.
She was like, oh, okay. It's like, but they trademarked it. There's a multi-level training structure to that now. So there's nothing new under the sun. So I would just ask that people really are sincere, and that not just sincere in intention, but like objectively, have I implemented this breathwork process? Does it help me overcome overwhelm every time? 99 times out of 100. Yeah, that's when you go to market. That's when you're on a TED Talk stage.
Absolutely. Okay.
It's like there was a funny story too about a really super right-wing guy. He's like a gun expert, gun rights advocate, whatever. And someone took him out hunting, and or he didn't know that they would be hunting or using firearms. And it was obvious to everyone he'd never handled a gun before. Right? People can bake a lot.
Oh my God. People are so good at it. I don't even know. Thank goodness I'm bad at it, but I would be so bad at faking a mediumship session. How?
Oh my God.
Oh my God.
I was a client earlier this year. I signed up. Someone had perfect reviews and I wanted a mediumship session. I consider it self-care because I do these things for others. I would love to talk to my grandmother and have a message from her and just receive that and not be the one doing it. The whole thing, it was so bad. It was so bad. And not just bad, like inaccurate or whatever, but like she misled me as to her location, kind of this cutesy thing. Shh, don't tell anybody that I don't really live in Austin, because they said I signed up with you because I want to like work on building community and be thoughtful about where my money is going. And it was apparently going to North Carolina, which for the record is not in the state of Texas. I'm not great at geography, but I'm pretty sure that's the case. And also being a faker at mediumship is one of the roughest ones. Cause like, number one, I knew my grandmother when she was alive. Number two, I talk to her now that she's dead. I named a flower essence after it's called Dead Grandma. Because she had that kind of a sense of humor. And I promise you, she didn't like Leanne Rimes. I would bet my entire life savings on that. That came up. My grandmother was the one who introduced me to the Jackass franchise, to South Park. She loved rap. No. Just no. And it's also, that's one where it's ethically weird, dude. Mediumship is the ethical pressure, because this is someone's loved one. It's their family member, disembodied or not. And you better come correct to that. And you don't have to get it perfect. That mediumship channeling work is some of the hardest work to do. So you should be kind to yourself and give yourself grace and ask that other people treat you respectfully and give you grace if you're putting in a good faith effort. But it's a high standard, I think. I think a tarot reading, a channeling session with spirit, some of these other things, there's a little less pressure in it. And also clients, sometimes when they come in for mediumship sessions, they want to test you. Okay. And that's a weird dynamic.
Oh, it's
and I understand where it comes from, but also I don't like the feeling of that. And can we just do the session? And the collective experience, I would like that to be the test. And just give me a second because you might hear something that's relevant in here. Yeah, that's the session. I stopped doing that in November. That's my first one that I pumped the brakes on before the big December break. Because it's got some human pressure to it, unlike the other sessions. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. No, you worded it so perfectly with the testing. I've turned down. Thank God it has not happened often. Only twice. Recently, I stopped the session. I'm like, I am not doing this. I don't like this.
Well, and also there are rules with communicating with the world of spirit. There are, and I don't have a handbook on them, but you just learn them over time where you run into a dead end every time. Like, they're not there to mess with the fabric of reality. They don't give you lottery numbers. They don't tell you what stock to buy. I mean, they tell Nancy Pelosi what stock to buy, but not me. They, you know, just this, they're, and also they're people in mediumship. Those are human beings. They're not there to perform tricks for you. And so the whole thing's wrong vibrationally. What I actually got from a client, by the way, a coaching client, we did a practice session because it was becoming obvious she had a natural talent for mediumship. It blew my mind. It was everything I ever wanted that I got from a client. So they are out there. And if anybody wants their recommendation, just reach out to me. Jen's fantastic. What I loved about it, her meeting those kind of expectations, was I really felt energetically like my grandmother was present. Some other family members were present. She was observing me. And the things that were coming through, they were criticisms, but for my own benefit, self-care wise. And it sounded like her. Do you know what I mean? Like it was her. And I just knew it. And I felt really supported. Yeah. I felt a lot of relief afterwards. Like, I don't have to burden things by myself. My ancestors really are with me. They're rooting for me. They're watching me. Those are the things that I think you can't get from any other session except mediumship. It's so beautiful. And as a practitioner, I don't know if you've had this experience where it's so life affirming. I get really emotional on mediumship sessions in a way that I don't in others, because it's so fucking sweet. Sometimes what they say, it's so poignant.
I 100% agree. I know it's like what you were talking about is funny because, yeah, it is high stakes with what am I saying? I don't know what I'm saying. And you really have to let that go, and you have to just drop in and let it flow. And even a really awesome practitioner, I had him on the podcast, his name is Sean Collins. He's like, throw your hands up and be like, I might totally screw up. Okay.
Yeah.
And honestly, it felt I've had those moments where they're like, no, or they just don't even want to give you anything. Yeah. And you're like, okay, cool. All right.
I think too, people don't realize when you're a medium and you're channeling that, everything you're saying is utterly meaningless to you. It sounds like nonsense to you, because it's not coming from you. And I want people to have a little empathy. Do you want to talk about stage fright or performance anxiety, man? To spout off a bunch of goddamn gibberish to you and hope to God in this trust fall with the client that it has some relevance for them. It's like skydiving. It's interpersonal skydiving. And the people who do it, I have a lot of respect for the sincere practitioners who do it. So you should be very proud of that. And yeah, every time, so this is my device too, is I go, I don't know, maybe today's the day it doesn't work. We'll see. And I hope it does.
Crossing the fingers. And like, quickly before my last question for you, yeah, it's like the rules of spirit are so funny. Sometimes they're like, nope, I don't want to talk. You're like, can you argue with that? Or let's say like the way spirit gives you the message is it's like based on their personality, based on their, what do you call it? Yeah, their demeanor. And then what's also been really fascinating is my grandmother, who's literally started my whole spiritual awakening, why I'm here, first tattoo, everything. Like her demeanor as spirit is the opposite of when she was a human. She was not a good person as a human being, but... Yeah. In spirit, they're like, she's so much like you. She's so funny and bubbly. I'm like, that's really nice to hear. And so I think that's where people, that's why I also try to tell clients is know that like they don't have that ego anymore. They don't have that resentment or, you know, insecurity. It's like
unavailable. You know, if you believe in incarnation, if you believe in life after death, then Grandma Nancy, in my case, she may not always be around because she might be busy. And so that's the other thing that I try and level set ahead of a mediumship session is we can ask people to come. We cannot compel them to, because I'm not God. I don't know where they are in the universe. Okay. They might be doing something really important somewhere. And we're going to interrupt them so that you can ask them what you should major in college. Like, funny.
Dude, seriously. Yeah. Those big time decisions. I'm like, let's pump the brakes.
Pure psychic. If they're not a son of a bitch and they're not running a con on you, be nice to them. It's been a long day. Okay?
Please throw us some flack. One last question. So I know I definitely asked you this on the last and you're on the podcast, but I'd love to ask you it again because I don't think it hurts to revisit this question. The power of skepticism and why it's a beautiful spiritual virtue, why it's a beautiful virtue. And I know this is something I've had to learn along the way is I'm someone who's very accepting and I've been accepting my whole life. And I think because I've had this natural desire, oh, I want people to feel safe by me. I want people to feel, I think ultimately I want people to feel like they can be themselves because I'm myself. And I used to have this trusting, I'm 100%, they're going to be 100% with me. But obviously that's not the case at all. And the power of discernment and especially how it's like, it's good. Anyways, it's good judgment, all that stuff. I don't want to answer the question I'm asking. So I'd let you take it away.
Yeah. So I think people misunderstand the word skeptical, which is why I wanted the podcast to be called The Skeptical Shaman, because I thought people would see it as like a paradox or anachronistic mm-hmm. or a contradiction. And it's not. So I used to be a good little atheist. And then I had a spiritual experience and I had to, quote, become skeptical of my current belief system at that time. And I had to ask questions. I had to dig. So skepticism and curiosity are two sides of the same coin. I'm skeptical, but I'm not closed-minded, but I have questions. So there's that curiosity piece. And then the other two extremes outside of that, to me, are nihilistic, black-pilled, I believe in nothing, I'm cynical, 100% cynical. Cynicism and skepticism are not the same thing. And then hyper-naive, and everybody's only got good motivations, and everything I'm told from an authority figure is true. Naivete and cynicism. In the middle is skepticism. And I think, to me, skepticism too, within spiritual work, you have to use discernment with spirit. You don't see them. You don't know them. They don't have social security numbers. You have no idea who the hell you're talking to. You better use discernment. You better be skeptical, right? And say, why are you here at midnight waking me up? Good spirits don't do that. Get out of my house.
Easier.
And using it as a tool so you can explore safely. And then with modalities and practitioners. This Guru Jagat in Breath of Fire. Hey, Guru, I never see you doing yoga. What's that about? Having the temerity to ask the question, I never see you do the postures or moves while we're in here. Can I ask you a question about that? You don't have to be rude. You just say, I'm curious about that. Because in other yoga studios, the yoga teacher does yoga with you, with any reason. Just things like that. And asking questions is how we learn. Asking yourself questions, being skeptical about yourself and your own beliefs from moment to moment without going completely crazy. But every once in a while, I'll be like, why is that such a thing with me? Or why is that a rule? When did I make that rule? And what was the function of that? Maybe I need to reevaluate that. I know people have an issue with Jordan Peterson, but one of the best things I've ever read in his book, I think it's 12 Rules for Life, is either your bad ideas die or you do. So your bad ideas have to die or you do. Maybe not literally, but in other way. So encouraging people to assess and destroy outdated ways of being, outdated ideas as new data comes in, is very important to you. It keeps you alive in every way that matters.
Mm-hmm.
And the real stuff, the real sincere, authentic stuff that, you know, is a part of your soul, it doesn't go anywhere. You don't lose that. You just lose bullshit. And maybe it wasn't bullshit when it was around last time, but it's grown into being bullshit. Maybe the situation changed, right? Yeah. So that's how I view skepticism. And I just wish more people were a little skeptical. I've had people ask me, like, why should I believe you? I go, you shouldn't. That's an excellent question. You should not believe. You can't take anything I say at my word. You should look into it all. And if you're uncomfortable around me, or you get tension in your body, or you just, something about this isn't stabilizing for you, we probably shouldn't work together. I think you're using your discernment. And I'm not butthurt about it. I don't need all of you to like me. It's fine. One of the upsides of having invisible friends is you're like, the invisible ones, the nature spirits, the ghosts, we're still cool. I'm okay.
Absolutely. Oh my gosh, you've been so generous with your time. It's been so good catching up with you again. Please share with the people where they can find you, sure. How they can work with you.
TotemReadings.com. Has all my links. I have a link tree on Instagram. It's Totem Rach. I am passive aggressive about being on Instagram. Enjoy that. I regularly post things just to see who's going to see it, where I'm at with that, because I think that's funny. And also, I think we just all take ourselves so seriously on social media. It's social media. It was originally intended to like share vacation pictures. We're going to make it out of here alive. It's okay. And I write a lot on Substack. I share a lot on there. And I publish early episodes of the Skeptical Shaman podcast on Substack, things like that. And Substack, I've written a lot about culty stuff and grifters. And I'm going to be writing something in December. I've been framing it out about the anatomy of a psychic reading, rough order magnitude, as a client, what you should expect, as a practitioner, what you should expect, basic things that are appropriate or inappropriate. For instance, like as a practitioner, I don't text my clients in between sessions without their consent and be like, just something else popped in and your dead grandma said, whatever you're doing, stop it right now. Just like the obvious, the basics, if you're interested in that content. Substack, I really enjoy. I like meeting other authors on there. And it's a totally inverted form of social media where people are nice and it's cultured and you learn stuff. Yeah.
Good stuff. I love it. Thank you so much. And
thank you.
Have a gorgeous day.
You too.